Well, that first game at Hillcrest, was it went down the wire. I think we won that game about the last part of it. It wasn't our running. We made a couple good passes and moved the ball down there right the last one we had to, because we'd worked on a lot of spot passing and cutting back towards the ball passing and running curls like that and catch and run type stuff. It's kind of like that RPO stuff that they're doing right now. So we worked on a lot of that kind of things, and it really kind of helped us, because most of the time we were a ground team.
Mike Weatherman, he is our coach today on Coach's Week Rewind. A fantastic coach here from North Central Kansas. What a career, and he coached basically about every single sport and was successful in all those sports. And he was referring to the Hillcrest game and the first state title run there in Sylvan. Coach Weatherman will join us coming up here near the bottom of the hour on the Sports Ticket. Dusty jumps in, senior spotlight today.
Yes, NCKSports.com, Cunningham Telephone and Cable Senior Athlete Spotlight. We go to Tipton and Tipton Catholic High School with seniors Alex Ketter and Tara Ellens. Ketter competed in three different sports here during high school and during the 2019 football season. He did fight off some injuries, but played in eight games for the 7-3 Blue Jay football team. Had five total touchdowns on offense and split time as a quarterback and tight end on defense. 62 tackles, six tackles for loss. He tied for the team lead with four sacks. Also had two fumble recoveries, was selected a second team all-district defensive lineman, and also selected to play in this year's eight-man all-star game at Division II. Alex Ketter also excelled for Tipton in spring sports. As a junior, he finished in the top 20 in Sand Green State Golf, also qualified for state and finished 12th in all of 1A in the 800-meter run as a junior, and finished 9th in that event as a sophomore as well at the state track meet. Tara Ellens has had a solid senior year for the St. John's Tipton Lady Blue Jays in volleyball and basketball. Ellens is second-team All-Northern Plains League selection on the volleyball court, finished 3rd on the team in kills with 88 as the Lady Jays went 30-9 in volleyball. She also 3rd on the team in blocks with 47, added 191 digs and 21 aces in basketball. An honorable mention, all MPL pick was Ellens, averaging 6 points a game, 4.5 rebounds, just under 2 steals a game for the 16-6 Lady Jays. She's also 65% free throw shooter. She's a state qualifier in Sand Greens golf during her career at Tipton as well. And Ellens has definitely excelled in the classroom, also maintaining a 4.0 GPA throughout. Also a Royal Purple Scholarship Award winner attending Kansas State. She's also a Kansas Honor Scholar and a 2020 Governor Scholar as well. So Tara Ellens, a great advocate there for Tipton Catholic High School as well. So if you missed any of that, you want to read about it, or you want to go back and look at our other senior athlete spotlights, you can always go to our website there, ncksports.com, and read all about it. Congratulations to Alex Ketter and Tara Ellens of Tipton Catholic High School.
All right. Congratulations to them. We'll have more senior spotlights in the weeks to come. Big news in regards to the Chiefs yesterday, Bashaun Breeland being arrested the night before, the afternoon before, in South Carolina. Breeland basically saying, you know, that a cop even saw that somebody threw a blunt or marijuana into my car, and that's what he said. But the detailed report from the sheriff's office states a few more details. And, of course, once again, the defense for Bashaun Breeland is a little different than what this statement says, and that's what you'll do. You'll try to spin, or perhaps this is a matter of race. We don't know. We don't fully know. But we do know that Bashaun Breeland, for basically 3 full minutes, or approximately 3 minutes, resisted the officers in this situation. And one of the interesting things I thought in this whole thing, they searched his vehicle, they located a large marijuana blunt, and they located approximately 3.2 grams of marijuana in Breeland's driver door, which, by the way, that's not very much. You know,
I love how the report says this. It makes it sound like it's just this ungodly amount of marijuana.
It's not pounds, it's grams. That is a very, very, very small amount, if you know anything in regards to measurements there. They also located 2 open bottles of Corona beer and 1 open bottle of Patron tequila, which, not saying that's right or anything like that, but, you know, that is the rule if you get pulled over and it's an open container, basically. Yeah. That's what it is. So that's not like it's a major thing. A lot of people smoke marijuana. In South Carolina, it is illegal. Some states, it is legal. So he was in South Carolina. He has marijuana in his car, not a huge amount. To me, none of that stuff's that huge of a deal. Now, if you're listening to me and you're saying, well, come on, Wade, that's ridiculous. He broke the law. What I'm saying is, yeah, he broke the law. It's just like, it's not just like, but it's a misdemeanor. I mean, you fly through a stop sign, get pulled over for not stopping at a stop sign. Should you go to jail for it? Probably not.
No.
You're probably not going to. We got enough people in prison that we don't need to put somebody in because they had 1 gram of marijuana or 3 grams of marijuana. And he's not going to go to jail unless he does something further beyond what is in this report. And the biggest thing really is the fact he resisted arrest multiple times. And then that's going to be the interesting part. There, according to this, they're saying that a lot of people that were there, witnessed it, were telling him to just, you know, quit resisting. Rashawn Breland gave deputies permission to look through his phone. Deputy Anthony saw several communications about drug transactions. Rashawn Breland had several messages to dealers placing orders of large quantities of marijuana in bags like what was found in his driver's door. I wouldn't say that was a large quantity of marijuana if it was 1.3 grams or 3.2 grams, but that seems to be a little misleading to me. And Deputy Anthony saw messages of large orders in various locations. Of course, what's your definition of a large order? Would be my next question. And Michonne Breland advised Deputy Anthony those deals were not around York County. He liked to smoke marijuana and was a marijuana enthusiast. He had a large amount of cash on him as well, which a lot of athletes do have a lot of cash on them. So what do we take out of all this? Listen, I would be surprised. I would be surprised. Not shocked, but I would be surprised if Bashan Breland is let go by the Chiefs. For everything that, I mean, they let everything play out with Tyreek Hill, and that actually worked out. We found out there was a lot of bad information that was out there, and that there seemed to be an agenda by a particular media entity in Kansas City. So we found out that wasn't quite as bad as everybody said, because I had Chiefs fans that are big Chiefs fans that immediately said, we got to get rid of him. It's like, well, yeah, you got to allow the process to play out a little bit. You know, it did seem really bad, the audio and everything else. But we jumped to conclusions. That's what we do in society. Yeah. You know, it's supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. But in our society nowadays in this country, it's guilty until you're proven innocent. And if you're proven innocent, well, I don't care because I already thought you were guilty and I don't want to change my mind. And Rashawn Breland didn't do anything horrible. Did he break the law? Yes. And I'm not saying that just because I'm a Chiefs fan. I'm not saying that at all. I'd say the same thing if this was a Bronco player. I would. Because now, if you say if it's 3.2 pounds of marijuana, now we got a whole different conversation.
You got an issue there.
You do. Or if he punched an officer with assault, you know, obviously assault of some kind, or berated an officer and it's caught on video and camera. I mean, yeah, okay. I don't know if that's still going to get you kicked off the team or not. Depends on how good a player you are. So there is, and you can help me clarify this because I haven't looked up all this information yet, but their word is that Bashan Breland is facing a 4-game suspension for substance abuse.
Yeah, and there's really nothing else out there about it that I've seen. But there
might
was
be marijuana. We don't know.
Yeah.
And
I would guess it probably
he's
was.
Appealing
but I'm not
it.
Gonna,
he's appealing you know. It. People are like, well, why didn't Chiefs draft more corners if they knew about this, or did they not know about this? Okay, first of all, I guarantee you they knew about the 4-game suspension possibility. I guarantee it. And this explains why Bashan Breland didn't get a multi-year deal on the open market, because he should have. So this explains how he fell back in the Chiefs' lap. Can the Chiefs live without Rashawn Breland for 4 games? Of course they can. They lived without Patrick Mahomes for 2 last year. They can live without Rashawn Breland for 4 games. Can they live without Rashawn Breland for the whole season and kick him off the team? I would say they can. They can. Won't be as easy, but they can. Logan Ryan's still out there, as far as I know, corner for the Titans. The Chiefs now have $6 million in cap space. You could give a 1-year, $6 million deal to somebody. You could. There could be guys, obviously, coming out of training camp that are cut by other teams, and you can pick up a corner that's undrafted, like, Charvarius Ward. You traded a backup offensive lineman to the Cowboys, and that didn't work out for the Cowboys, and the Chiefs got a starting corner in this league. So there's ways to fill Bashan Breland. I mean, you know, the guy they can't afford to lose is Patrick Mahomes, duh. And then after that, it's probably Kelsey. And then after that, it's probably Tyrann Mathieu. Those are probably the 3 most important players on the team for the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And I think Tyreek Hill is pretty important as well. So Bashan Breland is a piece of the puzzle. Can the Chiefs find a different piece to put into that puzzle if Bashan Breland is released by the Chiefs, or he's suspended for 4 games or 8 games? Yes. So if I'm a Chiefs fan, Don't worry about it. You've been on cloud nine for now almost 3 months because you won a Super Bowl, and this is the only negative thing that's come out here in a while. Well, why didn't the Chiefs draft more corners? They did draft two corners.
Yeah.
They drafted a guy in the fourth round who's got 4.37 speed. He might end up, you know, you might start the season with Fenton at one corner, Ward at another, and the Snead rookie is your backup at one corner.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay with that. I have no big problems with that. They got another guy in the seventh round. I don't know if he's going to pan out. He's a corner. I'm okay with having Helaire instead of reaching for a corner at pick 32 because of Bashaun Breeland's issues off the field. So
yeah.
I just think this is probably being made too big of a deal unless there's more information that comes out. Based on what we have, even from the sheriff's office, the full report, and then hearing what Breeland has to say, and then the fact that there is a four-game suspension that is pending for Breeland, I just don't think this is as big a deal as some people make it out to be.
No, I don't either. It looks bad when you read that about the resisting. That's
right.
The only thing for me that, because I think there's a little bit of embellishment in that police report about the amount of marijuana.
No question.
And for me, it's, you know, that makes it look worse the way he talks about it. And that makes it worse that he went through his phone, too.
Right.
But at the same time, you can't break the law unless you have it in your possession, I'm fairly sure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, there can be intent to sell, but I don't think there's intent to buy that you're breaking the law because mm-hmm. you don't have it yet. Not
right.
intent to sell, you have it, and you're trying to sell it.
Right.
So I don't, you know, that's not, I don't even care about that. If he's texting people saying, hey, I'm ordering this.
Yeah.
He doesn't have it yet. It's not,
you stopped
broken the law
that he
yet.
Had it in
yeah.
his possession.
Yeah. I mean, you
made deals, and in some states he could do that.
Yeah.
And I believe, right? Like if he went to Colorado, couldn't he?
Oh, yeah, he can have it shipped to his house in
Colorado.
That's what
I thought. I was going
to
say, in Washington.
Yeah, he can order it online, I think, in Colorado.
Yes.
I don't know if he can
do
it online or not,
so
he can order it and have
buy
it
whatever.
Sent to his house.
Now, if he sold it, would he be in trouble if he was in Colorado selling it because he's not a cannabis dealer or business?
No,
see, I don't know.
I don't know the law on that part.
I don't either.
But
I'm not by the way, I'm not a marijuana enthusiast.
No,
so
exactly.
I don't know
we
all
don't know
this
everything
stuff.
About it. Yeah.
I know there's probably a few people listening that might be. And that's okay. I'm not saying it's a horrible thing, and I'm also not saying that you should go out and smoke a whole bunch of marijuana either, all right? People, I'm a realist.
Yeah.
People smoke marijuana, all right? Players smoke marijuana, some for for medical purposes, in essence, okay, to help with pain,
mm-hmm.
and some do it recreationally, and some do too much of it. Just like there are people that drink alcohol and have a beer a day, which is fine. I have one every couple of days. That's probably fine, I would think. But if you drink six every day, that's a problem. You know, if you, you know, have a little bit of marijuana in where it's legal, you're, you know, okay. Now, if you're, that's all you do all day long is sit on the couch and smoke pot, I guess that's your choice. Just like sitting at home drinking a whole keg of beer, that's your choice. But when you go out and drive or you're under the influence and whatever else, now, of course, you put other people at risk. Just like people with COVID-19, you decide, oh, I'm more important than everybody else. I've got COVID-19. Well, I think I might have it. I'm waiting on my test, but I don't care. I'm still going to have a good time. Next thing you know, you could spread it to somebody else.
Yeah.
But if you stay at home and do what you're supposed to do, everything will be okay, and so forth and so on. So I just think, first of all, anybody that doesn't like the Chiefs, anybody's going to jump on the wagon and say this and make fun of the Chiefs and this. I'm going to tell you right now, I saw my buddy BP. I saw Clover. I'll pull his name out there. He knows he doesn't mind. Okay, Clover's a Dolphins fan. And BP is a Cowboys fan, all right? They're not Chiefs fans. And they're not hating on the Chiefs per se. They're having fun with it, and I get it, about Breeland should be now captain of the team because that's a shot at Tyreek Hill being on the team, basically. And this is a completely different situation. And I mean, for crying out loud, Laremy Tunsil, wasn't he drafted by the Dolphins?
I think so.
He was caught on video smoking out of a bong, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
And so I don't think a Dolphin fan should really say. And here's the thing. I know that the Dallas Cowboys have had players with possession of marijuana. Okay.
Worse than that. Back
worse
in
than
the
that. 90s. Oh, back in the day, Nate Newton and he had cocaine and everything else.
Traded the fridge for a Coke machine. You heard the joke.
Yeah.
I mean.
So if you're a Cowboy fan or a Dolphin fan, I've just gave you examples right then and there of how hypocritical it is making. And that's okay. You can make fun of it. Don't get me wrong. Chiefs fans make fun of people. It's like, hello, you got Tyreek Hill on your team. oh, the travesty of this guy doing this. Like, hello, you have Tyreek Hill on your team, and he can't be a model citizen, even though he might be better model citizen than you believe. Or this guy got arrested with pot. Yeah, Dwayne Bowe got arrested and pulled over. He had possession of marijuana.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, players get to, this happens a lot in all sports, and I guarantee you with a capital, and now I can't spell the word probably, but I guarantee you, capitalize it and put it in bold print. Every single professional sports team has someone on their team smoking marijuana.
Oh, yeah.
I assure you of that. There's at least one, probably multiple, on every single team. So don't sit here and get on your high horse acting like Bashan Breeland's the only guy smoking pot, okay? He's not. The Cowboys have access to it.
He's not the only guy that's probably didn't grab his license when he went out to drive.
Right.
He's probably not the only guy that has an open container of vodka or tequila or whatever in his car.
And we're not saying that's right.
No, and not saying he's drinking it while he's in the car.
Right.
You have
or his buddies could have been.
I'm
his
going,
buddies
yeah.
could have been.
And they might have been drinking it. It's just open container
right.
means the seal's open.
Right.
It doesn't
that's
even have
means.
To be open
right.
using it. You
right.
know, it's
mm-hmm.
thrown in the back seat, and they
oh,
see
yeah.
that, and it's
oh,
open.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's you're going to get that.
Sure.
That's going to be one of the charges.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think the biggest thing is the resisting arrest.
That's for me, too, is like you put yourself in a lot of danger like that. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then it doesn't help when you resisting arrest for 3 minutes and, continuously, not complying with officers is going to be a problem.
He got back in his car and they couldn't see his hand and stuff. I mean,
yeah.
he's lucky he didn't get shot based on
yes.
the sheriff's report.
Yes.
Okay. And we know, and maybe this thing went too far and it was a matter of race. Maybe it wasn't. But in some of these situations, he could have been shot.
Yes.
The way he handled it. If you just go with it, even if you're not, you don't feel you've done anything wrong, the better you can deal with it instead of resisting usually makes it worse. At the same time, somebody listening out there may say, oh, come on, you guys don't know what you're talking about, because there are people that are racist or people that have a vendetta that are in law enforcement. And what are you supposed to do? Just go get arrested and be thrown in jail when you didn't do anything wrong? I understand. There's a fine line there. I get that. I do. But I've never been in that situation, so I can't really tell you what it's like.
Yeah.
I really can't. So I think there's probably a lot more to this. Is it going to be a matter of, were these white officers? And I don't know. Were
yeah,
all the
yeah,
friends of
yeah,
Rashawn
right.
Breeland black? According to what, in the report, yes, it was 3 black males. So what? And this is in South Carolina. You're in the South, obviously. We know racism is there. If anybody out there that believes there is no racism left in our country, you are naive, and I don't know what else to tell you. Racism is abounding. There's racism right here in our county, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
I know it. Even people I know that are a little bit racist, and honestly, I think they know it. So let's not act like there isn't anything like that. But I think we got to let this thing play out. I think Breeland didn't do everything the way he should have.
No.
And I'm just based on the way this whole report was worded by the officers, I feel like they're covering their rear on some of this too. And I just think it's somewhere in between is what I believe. And
yeah.
usually it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you want to make fun of Breeland smoking pot and that he should be the Chiefs team captain. I think that's funny. It's a funny joke. Ha ha. Just wait till a Cowboy player gets arrested with pot. Or something worse. And then I'll throw that comment back out there. Go, I guess I'll be a captain with Dak Prescott. And here's the thing. I've heard Breeland's not very smart. Well, Dak Prescott apparently had a party. I don't know if you heard about this.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
teammates were with him. There was no social distancing, even though those were the rules in Texas. And he just ignored those rules.
Yeah.
So is that smart? So let's not even get it going on whose players are smarter than whose players and whose players are doing more marijuana than other players. Every professional sports team has somebody on their team taking marijuana, whether legally, allowed, or illegally. Book it.
Yes.
And just don't get booked in the jail by getting caught too much.
Don't book it in Charlotte, North Carolina jail, but book it.
where was it? York County, South Carolina? Was that where it was, where he was?
Where he was arrested, and then they took him to Charlotte.
Oh,
so it must have been. It must be right on the border, I'm guessing.
I gotcha. All right, to be continued. That's the most we've ever talked about marijuana on this show. I can tell you that right now. Probably the last time we'll talk that much about it, too. I hope, anyway. The NCAA announced Wednesday that the Board of Governors supported rule changes that allow student-athletes to profit from their likenesses beginning in the 2021-2022 academic year. The NCAA noted that if the rule changes are officially passed, student-athletes will be able to get compensated for third-party endorsements, both related to and separate from athletics, and social media businesses they have started in personal appearances as long as they exist within the NCAA's guidelines. While student-athletes are set to benefit from their likenesses, the NCAA said it will still be illegal for universities or colleges to pay student-athletes for their names, images, or likenesses. Additionally, the NCAA stipulated that while student-athletes will be allowed to identify themselves by sport and school, they won't be permitted to use school logos or trademarks in conjunction with their business ventures. Okay, we could spend a lot of time on this. I really don't want to now because I don't think the NCAA has any idea how they're going to do this. I think they've been pressured into a corner.
Mm-hmm.
They've decided we better move with this. How is this going to work? How do you keep boosters out of this equation now if you're allowing types of things like this? What's allowed? What's not allowed? Can athletes hire agents and still go back to school? There's lots of questions. How will the NCAA determine what's fair value for an endorsement and what's an impermissible extra benefit? I mean, what's the line? Is it 20 grand, 10 grand, 5 grand?
Yeah.
I think that, you know, I've said this all along. You've said it, I think, more so than me, that when we go into allowing players to get paid or getting endorsement deals that are amateur athletes, supposedly, that you're opening up a Pandora's box. And we talked about it. Should you just go ahead and pay athletes? Well, if you pay them, then they're not amateurs anymore, which some of that's happening already.
Mm-hmm.
If you are paying athletes a stipend, do you pay every single athlete, including the guy or gal that's rowing or playing tennis? You know, how do you do it? Where do you draw the line? You open up the Pandora's box, and I think the Pandora's box is almost here. Is the NCAA going to have their football video game coming back? Is that going to be allowed? I know people are excited if that would be.
And there's some stipulations where it's tough for that to happen because it's groups and it's not individuals.
It won't, by the way. When does it go in effect? We talked about that, so you got some time to try to figure it out. I just don't know. The NCAA can't enforce what they got now. I just don't know. I mean, maybe it's better this way because there's less to enforce, or does this make it even more complicated and more difficult to determine player A and player B and players or school A and school B? And is there a threshold? Oh, okay, you got $20,002. That exceeded the threshold. You're suspended. Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah, and I don't know. Nobody knows what any kind of numbers would be on that.
No,
I feel like if it's, you know, there are certain things there, like if a player has his own business, then he sets the price.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do anything about that, I wouldn't think. You know,
right.
It's like, this is what it costs for my products, you know, and how can the NCAA govern that?
Mm-hmm.
If it's set by the, you just said he can have his own business, and if people pay him that money for that,
mm-hmm.
where does it end or start or whatever for me is,
right.
You know, appearances, there's usually fees that, you know, a coach or somebody or, you know, whoever a motivational speaker is would charge for something like that.
Right.
So they kind of set the price, and then whoever is having them in pays them for it.
Yeah.
So I don't know, you know, I don't know where you set all that.
I don't either. Here's a few reactions. The Florida representative legislature, he says it's embarrassing for the NCAA, their plan that they came out with yesterday, which I wouldn't even call a plan. Idea, really, I guess. What else we got here? Greg Doyle writes that the new NCAA name, image, likeness stance is realized it's a real-life chaos theory. Chaos will follow after all this. I think it's possible. The NCAA shift towards athletes making money is far from simple. That's a story from the New York Post. I do think it opens up a Pandora's box. I really do, and I don't know what's going to happen in the future with college athletics, but there are a lot of people like, well, who cares? Players get what they get. Okay. I don't see how the little schools are going to do very well in this thing if it's going to be you get what you get, and you just let it be the Wild West and let anybody do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And come on, man. We know Alabama's got tons of boosters. They got boosters paying. They're paying the mortgage in the house for Nick Saban. Plus, he gets $7, $8, $9, $10 million a year. I mean, come on. There's plenty of money around. Even though with COVID-19, there's still a lot of people in this country that have money.
Yeah, and that's Fitz was on with somebody yesterday from Go Pirate Cat and talking about, you know, what kind of endorsements would be in Manhattan,
right,
compared to Austin, Texas.
Uh huh. Which would
affect you as a player
that is pretty good, that, hey, I got a chance to make more money endorsements if I go to Texas instead of going to Kansas State or Kansas.
Yeah.
Or Iowa State.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's just like Manhattan, Kansas, and not going to have a lot of big corporate dealers, sponsors that you're going to be able to pull endorsements from, especially for more than one or two athletes.
Right.
You know, it's going to be Skylar Thompson and nobody else, you know.
This is like a recruiting advantage almost, maybe.
And they say that, you know, people say that, no, it's not a recruiting advantage because Texas already has a recruiting advantage over Kansas State anyway. K-State always makes their best teams out of three-star athletes anyway. And I get that to an extent, but there's still an advantage. You can't just sit here and say, no, it's not going to be any kind of advantage.
I guess the counter-argument I would ask or the counter-question would be, does it help K-State or Iowa State?
No.
Okay, then there you go.
Yeah.
If it can't help them,
it might not hurt them like
you think it
will, but it's definitely not going to help them, and it is going to help Austin, Texas.
It'll only help them, right.
Yeah.
It can only help them. Yeah, I'm with you. Speaking of money, John Curry, former AD at K-State, is AD at Wake Forest. Goodness gracious. Wake Forest believes it does not have to pay Danny Manning the $15 million on his buyout he had on his existing deal because he failed to meet certain criteria. What, not enough wins? I've been told Wake Forest feels it owes Manning less than half of the $15 million. Two sides could wind up going to court or settling out of court. And on a related note, apparently John Curry is going to hire Steve Forbes as new head coach from East Tennessee State to take over at Wake Forest, replacing Danny Manning. So stay tuned. But everywhere John Curry goes, there seem to be problems or issues
yes.
of some kind. We already see KU spent what? $350,000 in legal fees to try to avoid paying David Beatty $3 million for that lawsuit.
Yeah.
Which to me, it's just like, I guess right now, maybe that's
10% of what you're...
you already paid 10% of it in legal fees. Is it worth all that and then all the dirt that comes out? Or just go ahead and pay it? But at the same time, with now COVID-19, $2.5 million difference right now could be pretty big deal if you win the case. If you lose the case, you wasted at least $350,000. I don't know. I don't know all the details. NFL and Amazon are going to continue their relationship. The tech giant will be able to stream Thursday night football games through 2022. Here's the interesting thing, that there will be one game. I'm trying to see what year it's going to be. There's going to be one game where Amazon will be streaming it, and the only way you can watch the game is on Amazon unless you're in a home market. So if it's the Chiefs versus the Rams, LA and Kansas City would have, it'll be on TV, regular over-the-air TV, but anybody else across the country would have to watch it via Amazon through streaming. We talked about this for a while now. Mm-hmm. We were ahead of the curve on this
a
long time ago about how that's where it's going, streaming and this and that, and Amazon has tons of value, even a lot more now that their stock price is up to $2,300 a share, and their earnings come out, I think, today, and I'm guessing their earnings will be pretty good. So Amazon is a gigantic player and will be even a bigger player, I think, down the line when it comes to sports and rights fees and how you're going to view sports in the next 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, you already see it with third tier in college sports right now with ESPN Plus. So, you know, it's where it's going. People complain about it all they want, but they don't care about us here in the small communities that might not have, you know, the resources that all the big cities do.
It's a new
and we do have it here, fortunately.
A new three-year deal worth more than $200 million just to broadcast or stream 11 Thursday night football games.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that for a second. $200 million, 65 per season roughly. So 65 divided by 11, Amazon's paying $6 million per game to stream for the rights fee.
Yeah.
That's what it is, basically, to make it simple.
Yeah.
Wow.
Chunk change.
Let me tell you something. Amazon, $200 million is like a penny to Dusty and I on a couch cushion. That's nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. All right, Coaches Week. Who are we going to talk to today?
Yeah, Mike Weatherman had a very...
Oh, well, you know, let me hold on a second. Okay. I'm sorry. I apologize. I teased somebody, and I'd be remiss so I don't mention this. The NBA is talking about now possibly playing the rest of their season in the postseason at Disney World. At Disney World. Yes, they're going to put the players on the big ride and whoever flies off first loses or pukes. No, that's not how it's going to work. But it has been floated out there by the NBA, according to some sources, that the Disney's Wide World of Sports venue in Orlando offers a number of advantages for the NBA, including multiple courts, multiple hotels, proximity to all Orlando Magic facilities, and immediate readiness for broadcasting, so they put the games on the air, whether it be ABC, ESPN, or whatever, their broadcast partners.
Yeah.
Interesting. Makes a little bit of sense.
Get it to work. It would work.
There's still a lot of obstacles to deal with in regards to returning to the floor and where you're going to do this. Same thing in Major League Baseball and possibly NFL down the line as well in regards to how do you keep the players away from everybody else and are they going to be willing to do this and so forth and so on. All right. Now, I'm sorry. I'm done. I just forgot that I didn't mention that, and I should have.
No, yeah, you're fine. As you mentioned earlier, Mike Weatherman will be joining us here this morning and had a lot of success there at Sylvan Unified and Sylvan Lucas for a couple of years during the cooperative there. So he'll be joining us. His most success came in football and girls basketball, and that's a lot what we're going to focus on here and hear about nearly four decades worth of experience there for Mike Weatherman in Sylvan Grove. So hope everybody enjoys that here this morning, and Mike Weatherman with us on Coaches Week here on Katy Country 94.
All right, enjoy.
Welcome here on the Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94. Mike Weatherman joining us now, a longtime head coach, Sylvan Unified and Sylvan Lucas Unified there for a short time as well. So Mike Weatherman joining us here to talk about his longtime career as a coach here in North Central Kansas. Coach, first of all, thanks for taking the time. Hope you're enjoying retirement and being able to do those things and relax a little bit. But we're going to kind of go back and just go over your career. I talking with you, you graduated from Elkhart High School in 1967 down there in Southwest Kansas, and then went to KU and graduated in 71. But maybe take me back to your high school days and what first got you interested in sports and what you're able to do there at Elkhart.
Well, we had some pretty good teams at Elkhart. In fact, we won the league, High Plains League Championship 4 years. So I played with a lot of guys that were like some of our teams. We were really interested in playing football because that we just didn't have talent to be a really good basketball school. So we always geared for football almost all the time back then. And so we worked pretty hard at trying to get ready to play football. So that was the big thing when I was going through high school. I actually wanted to go on. I had a couple offers from Fort Hays State and West Texas State to play football. But KU kind of got me interested in going there for school. And so that's why I went that direction. Fort Hays had some pretty good programs back then, and I was interested in going on, but I ended up at KU.
Interesting question. It's 1967, so that's in the middle of the war and everything like that. So, when you go over to KU, is there any concern like that in your mind? I mean, it was a different time than it is now.
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of protesting and stuff like that. My draft board was out of Hugoton, Kansas, and my draft number is 23, but I went Olathe to student teach in the fall that year, and right after I got done, my draft board said, well, you got to be ready in January. Well, that's when they call the war off and the draft and the whole thing. So, but there was a lot of protesting, but I think that was a campus thing. A lot of college kids were out doing that, and I didn't really get involved, but I had some people that were my friends. They kind of got into the protesting thing, but that it was a different time period, and you're kind of starting to see that a little bit on TV, people protesting and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's just part of history, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So you ended up, again, graduating KU in 71, and then you came back to Southwest Kansas to Lakin, right?
Yes, I came back to Lakin. And I was there for 2 years. I did some junior high coaching, and I did the head high school boys coaching, and I'm still looking for a football job. And my high school counselor was there, and he had already taken a job at Sylvan as the superintendent, and he called me up in the middle of summer because he didn't think he had anything open and said, hey, we do have a football job open. Are you interested? So I came up and interviewed for that. Was able to get it. I liked the area, and I've been here ever since.
Yeah, long career and a long successful career there in Sylvan Grove. What were your first impressions when you got to Sylvan Grove? You were playing 11-man football at the start, right?
Yeah, we played 11-man for about 8-9 years, and we kind of started slow, but we had some success with the later bunch of 11-man kids, and we kind of started running. That was the Wishbone area. Era and we started running that, and we was running Notre Dame split four defense, and our kids we used their speed to do those two things, and we got pretty competitive. And the next year, we turned to eight-man. We had some good kids left, so we had good eight players, and that's when we went straight to the eight-man state playoffs that year against, Southwest Kansas. There's a team down there that we played for the state championship.
Mineola, yeah.
Anyway, we had some pretty good kids there, and that kind of set us off for the eight-man thing, too. And we had kids almost all the time, really, because we stayed with running option of football and kind of doing a moving defense, stunning defense, and stuff like that. So the kids like playing it that way, so we just stayed with it.
So, again, then you move on. Just going through this eight-man career that you had there at Sylvan Unified, and just kind of looking at, including some 11-man appearances. You made it to the playoffs 17 times. You won 3 state titles and 2 state runner-ups. Just expand a little bit more on that and how much that meant, I guess, to the program and to be able to do that and I guess, get a little confidence about what you're doing, not just as a coach but as a team.
Yeah, as a team, you know, it was kind of everyone, well, okay. A lot of people wanted to stay 11-man, and a lot of teams around here were dropping. So for scheduling reasons, to find people to play, it was almost a must that we had to drop down to 8-man. Well, the kids took off on it right away. They liked playing it because they played 8-man in junior high. Ever since, well, from the time I got here, they were playing 8-man junior high, 11-man high school. So it wasn't an adjustment, very big adjustment for some of them because they liked the 8-man game, and there was a lot of schools right around here. That's what they were doing. So when we made it to state there, the first year we played 8-man, it was just a big jump. Our kids really got excited about it, and there was a lot of kids out. The kids got to play. So it was a big thing when we made it that first year to kind of get the program going in the right direction.
So, again, you made it in 1980, and again, a lot of playoff appearances in between all that. But then you get into the 90s, and you know, just talking with you off the air and just in other passing about your teams, that's when really things started turning around. It looks like, especially the mid-90s, you know, you get the state championship there in 1995, your first state title. Take me through that run to start the 90s and then to kind of peak and finally get that first state championship.
Well, we were knocking right on that earlier because we had some teams in the late 80s. We were getting close. We were generally in the playoffs. We just couldn't get over the hump sometimes to get to the state championship game. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we lost out several times in the sub-state round and never made it to the state championship. Finally, we kind of hit that and got over the hump there and made it to the state playoffs. And the first year there with and Ben Leiber too, and the Meitlers, and there were some kids that were, you know, they were just wanting to play football, and they were even young, some of them at that time, because Clint was a freshman, Darius was a sophomore, and Ben was a sophomore. So we had, the first year we made it, we were pretty young people that were in the playoffs, and that kind of started carrying us into other players that were coming up, like John Weesey, Josh Bohr, Conrad Wehrman. They were some of the players, and it was just like we were going through a lot of kids that's what they played. They just wasn't going out for a lot of basketball because all of our linemen were generally just football players. So, and they wasn't very big. These were kids that were going to dominate you. They were kids that got off the ball quick and were able to block, and they did a good job of doing that. So that's what I think. So that was our success. Just kids working hard together, and team was the thing, and we just eventually started turning it around because we won state championship 3 out of 4 years. Mm-hmm. But then we still was playing for that later. We had one team go to the state championship later, and they ended up playing Hanston, we beat Hanston in the state championship, and we turned around and had to meet them about the next year and in the state championship, and they returned the favor.
Yep.
So it's just one of those deals because Hanson had some good football. We had some good football, and sometimes we were on the same side of the bracket all the time. Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna talk with you about Hanston a little bit more coming up. But let's go back to 1995, your first state championship, and it looks like the first round game against Hillcrest might have been the toughest game that year. You beat them by 10, and then beat South Haven and Leroy comfortably. You beat Ashland 60-20 in the state championship game. What was the playoff run like, and finally getting that culmination in 1995?
Well, that first game at Hillcrest, it went down the wire. I think we won that game about the last part of it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't our running. We made a couple good passes and moved the ball down there right the last one we had to, because we'd worked on a lot of spot passing and cutting back towards the ball passing and running curls like that and catch and run type stuff. It's kind of like that RPO stuff that they're doing right now. And so we worked on a lot of that kind of things, and it really kind of helped us, because most of the time we were a ground team, that sometimes we'd come up and throw when people didn't expect it, off of play action passes or trick plays, because we ran a lot of double passes and stuff like that. So that helped us jump. That road game really kind of got us going into that state championship round.
So then 1997 is your next state championship there in 8-man Division II, and it kind of similar, but you kind of rolled in the first two games over Northern Valley and Tri-Plains, and Haviland gave you a good game. You win 34-20 and then beat a Hope team 56-32 in the championship game. That's kind of when Hope was starting to come around in 8-man football, wasn't it?
Yeah, we hit Hope with another team to the east. It was kind of like Hanston to the west and Hope to the east. We played them a lot. They had a good team, and they were always well prepared, and they were very competitive. They were kind of hitting that stage there where they were starting to come up too. And that was a big game that night when we beat them that way. And so our the game in the state championship, when we just had a pretty good game that game. So it was a good victory for us.
It always stands out to me when I'm kind of looking through these teams that you actually ended up beating in playoff runs, because in 1998 you beat Wakanda East and shut them out 56-0, and I've always heard the lore of how good Wakanda East has been around here in the past and maybe not been able to finish things off. But then you beat Hope again in the second round, and that's the year that you're talking about, that you beat Hanston in the championship game. As far as 1998, did you feel like more now you're settling in and this is kind of what we expect to do?
Well, some of the reason we were there was because some of those kids started playing. That was Clint's senior year, mm-hmm. and he had started playing some for us as a freshman when we first started that run. And with some of those kids had been playing for him like 4 years, and they'd been starters, both Meitler, Zabor, and the Frederick kid. There was kids that had gone through that and won when they were younger. So, you know, we expected quite a bit out of them when they reached that finally senior year. In fact, we had a couple games. It was really close going into that last game, at a couple of sub-state games, and we were behind at halftime in one of those games, and the kids just didn't let down. They were really jacked up. They wasn't going to lose. So it was their mentality. You got to give kids credit too. If they have that, they want to do it, right, rather than you having to try to get them to do it. So it was on their own. Sometimes they stepped up and got together and had the mentality to stay in the game and want to win it.
Again, as you said, you beat Hanston in 1998 for that championship. And when I'm going through games and some of your things in your career, I do notice that I think it was like 4 years in a row your last game was against Hanston with a loss. And I don't want to bring up bad memories for you, but just what was it like to be a part of that? And I know Coach Jerry Slayton was one of the greats in 8-man football, and I know you had a lot of battles with him, and he's no longer with us, unfortunately. But what was it like to go up against Jerry and those Hanston teams?
Well, they had the Solomon kid was probably one of the best quarterbacks I've watched, and we've had some good quarterbacks. He was really good. I mean, he could throw the ball, he could run the ball, he'd call audibles at the line. I mean, he was just a kid that had a good football mind, and they started doing that a little bit after we beat him in the state championship, and after we did that. I mean, we ran into them, and they did. They started coming. They had good teams after that. So we just wasn't maybe talent-wise matching them as well as we had been in the past. So, you know, it's just a good game all the time. But like I said, they probably knocked us out four times, but we got that far and had that greatest season, because sometimes we both went in there undefeated in those sub-state games. it's one of those times that you see playoffs, and that happens on one side of the bracket, and the other side of the bracket may not be to have those kind of records. It's a tough thing to get that far and lose.
Is there any of these teams that you had in the past, and maybe it was one of these teams that it got beat out by Hanston, kind of look past and into your past and into your career, that maybe, man, this team was probably good enough to win a state championship and just didn't quite get it done?
You know, against Hanston, when they got to their best, I don't know. I don't know at that time whether we were talented enough to really do that, but we made most of the games pretty competitive. But when they played in that state game and we lost them in the state game, and that was one of our state runner-ups, they were much faster. Mm-hmm. And I see you can tell that real quick in eight-man football in state championship game, because I watched Norham Valley when they were going through, Chuck was going through things. And, I mean, they just operate. They were so fast. And that's the way Hanston was. That's what helped us win. We didn't have big linemen. I mean, we had some 120, 130-pound kids starting at center and guards. But we taught them to get off the ball and get across the line. And officials would always comment on them. First thing I go back in, I would not talk to backs. They had a good running day. I said, the linemen, I told them what some of the officials would say, how hard they came off, how low we came off, and how quick we got to the defense. And so we played with kids that were small, but we taught them how to play low and hard.
So, again, a lot of success there on the football field. They finished up the career in 2011, 38 years with a record of 267 and 113. When you look back and everything about the football coaching career, what are some of the things that you remember the most that stick with you throughout all that?
Well, I think one thing that the week made a turn, it's our kids. They deserve a lot of credit. Mm-hmm. And I had Coach Labertu, that's Ben's dad, Stan. He coached with me for like 25 years. We had a good coaching staff. We coached good together. We always had the right ideas. We watched film, and that's back when you had no VCR takes. I'd take it home, and I'd give it to him, and we'd see the same thing. Where we made a mistake or where we did something good, because when we went into film sessions on Monday, we'd coach well together. And I had a lot of other assistants, but Stan was the one that was with me most of the time. He made that go. But you also got to go back. We had kids that were really, we just didn't have kids that were messing around in practice. We had kids that really worked hard, and we never had to, get on them about you got to work harder. They were willing to lift the weights, because we competed in the state eight-man weightlifting thing. We always were right there with Cabrera Heights. We just did the things that they needed to do to gain strength and speed and things like that. But also, I got to give some credit to Coach Labertu, because we coached together for all that time, and we just coached good together. He had the defense, I had the offense, and we'd make suggestions. We saw something on the other side of football, because I did a lot of line coaching on offense and defense, and he did the secondary on defense and the backs on offense. So even though he was coaching that, we're both doing some part of it.
We're talking with Mike Weatherman, longtime head coach at Sylvan Grove, Sylvan Unified. Coach, a lot of times after I talk about a football career like that or any kind of sport like that, we're pretty well done. But you have a unique situation where you coached a long time in girls basketball and had a lot of success as well. And so we're going to slide into that. And this is obviously coaching boys and girls at that age is probably a different aspect of how you got to coach one part of the year. And then the next part of the year, you're getting into the girls and basketball. And I know just talking with coaches around here, whenever they played you, they always feared playing you because you're just in their face defensively all the time. And I know that's how you built your program, right?
Yes, we were really good working at defense, because, like I said, from the very start, we had Annette Wiles, but we had other kids who were, they wasn't too bad, but they wasn't really adapted to offense. So we stressed playing defense most of the time. So I coached the boys basketball at Lake, and I coached it here till that year I took over the girls. So I had always coached defense on the court, and so I took it to the girls, because I figured girls, if they play defense, they're not as even at the offensive shooting as boys teams are, and you're going to win some basketball by just playing good, hard defense. And the girls bought into it. They knew they were going to get on the court for me. They were going to have to press, and they were going to have to play man-to-man some and learn different types of techniques in the defense. Because sometimes we'd be zone pressing the next on a made, and we'd come back the next time on a miss and play man-to-man. We kept people just wondering what we were in. Sometimes they couldn't even recognize whether we were playing the zone matchup or the man mm-hmm. defense. And so, but the girls bought it. They were like the guys. They bought into that. And the best thing that happened to us was like the football when we made it the first eight-man state championship. Well, we reached the state or got beat by Spearville the first round. And the girls that year, but even to make it to state, kind of jumped us because next year we were playing Spearville for the state championship. That's how quick we jumped, and it just kind of stayed with us then.
So, again, you moved on there, and there was a stretch there where Sylvan Unified made it to the state tournament eight straight seasons, and I know you're part of, sounds like, seven of those then. Just looking at that, you finally do win that state championship in 1989. Had a tough game in the first round against B&B, but won and ended up beating Norwich in the championship in 89. What stands out the most about that first group that was able to win a state championship for you?
Well, a lot of those kids were actually on my JVs when we started with Annette, because there were some seniors. When they were juniors, when Annette started, and there was a bunch of girls in that class. There wasn't very many seniors. And so those kids that played for the state championship, they were all freshmen or sophomores. So they were beginning to kind of be off-the-bench players when they got there. Then when they had to take over, they were pretty solid, because Deanne Wiles and Annette's sister was on that team, and Britt Labertue and some other pretty good basketball or sophomores, Britt Labertue and Christian Meitler, and there were some pretty good players to go along with them.
So again, you won it in 1989, and then you're again all the way to state for all those years in between that. But in 1993, you win your second state championship, and it seems like this team was probably a pretty dominant one. You dominated really all three games. You won over Ashland in the championship by 21 points. What made that team so good and maybe one of your best?
Well, they were probably one of our better defensive players, but what was really amazing. We just didn't have about five or six kids that could play, so we didn't have a lot off the bench with those kids. So they were so good in shape that they could play a whole game and still be playing the same at the end as they were at the start, because they were pressing, they were playing hard defense and stuff like that. We just didn't have a lot of depth, but the talent that was out there, they were pretty good offensive players too. But I still have to give it to the defense. Some of the teams we shut down came from the defensive end. So they, and they played on that. Some of them have played on that 89 state championship team. They were young coming up through that. And just our younger kids sometimes started watching the older kids, and they wanted to be there too. So that's just a big, big plus for you. If you can get kids coming up from junior high or high school, they want to be like so-and-so, and they want to make it to state. Well, then you kind of get that attitude. That's mm-hmm. what the goal is to get to the finish line.
You talk about that attitude and wanting to succeed. How much did it help, having Annette come through your program? And I know she didn't win a state championship, but obviously was a great player, and she went on to set the record at Fort Hays for most career points and things like that. But what does it mean to have somebody like that within the program that you can historically kind of look at and say, this is what you can do, you can have success?
Well, when she started playing at Fort Hays State, and Coach Klein and I became good friends, because he came over the night he signed her, and then he had me working camps and stuff like that. So we'd take the girls to Fort Hays State to Klein's camps, and Annette was over there coaching and playing, and the girls would play after camp was over, the college girls would play, and they could sit there and watch them play and stuff like that. So when they see one of our own players out there playing, then we were pretty successful. It put a lot of girls into college basketball, because I counted one time we had a picture, six of them with six different uniforms on. Mm-hmm. Some of them were JUCO, but some of them were four-year schools, and they were all from Sylvan.
So a lot of success in that breed, success to get on to the next level as well. How many of your girls, you talked about, you know, that team being in shape. You didn't have a lot of depth on that team. But I also kind of think in my mind you have to be in shape to play the defense that you're playing as well. How many of your girls just hated your practices?
Really? They liked that.
Did they?
I call them defense is offense.
Yeah.
You want to play hard enough defense, you don't have to get up and slap at the ball, do this. You just got to be in the lane, knock the ball away, make them throw bad passes. If we get opportunities to run with the ball, we're going to do it. So I just convinced them, you know, the harder you play defense, the more we're going to be able to get the ball down on offense. So we kind of stressed that defense was offense, and they bought into that because they were playing so hard. And it was a big thing for them to take some of the best people we played against and shut them down. I mean, we would build up schemes. Sometimes it was a box and one. Sometimes we, on our man defense, we were always triple teaming the main post or the strong side post, and people just didn't realize what we were doing. But we, the whole team defense concept, because I kind of got that from Klein when he was, because he was playing it, and I took it and put it in for our girls, the man-to-man defense like it was. And it was a Dick Bennett defense, and they were playing at Wisconsin Stevens Point, and they adapted that defense, and a lot of colleges started using it, but we had a lot of success with it. But I adapted it into our zone presses, and put it in there, so we used the same concepts on our zone matchup as we did on our man. So, and that's why I thought, you know, they really got the idea defense is offense.
As a basketball coach, I have you in 35 seasons with 550 victories. So, you know, total that up with football, you had 817 career victories by my count and the numbers that I have. But I know you mentioned it a little bit about, you know, what stood out in football for you, but you have to have a lot of people involved in making that many wins, don't you?
Yes, you do. And I, just like I was talking about Coach Labertu in football, I had several assistants. Coach Veneta was one of them. Coach Schoaf that is over at Thomas More Prep right now, Gwen Wehrman, Coach Wehrman. There was a lot of girls. I had some very good assistant coaches. They were just about as big part of it, but I had more of them because some of them were having families and having kids, so I had to switch so much.
Yep.
So it was nice. I had a good bunch of ladies that coached with me, and the players always liked them, and so that helps too. If you got coaches that get along together and they work together and they have fun together, it's going to turn the kids into that type of player.
I know that it's kind of crazy when you probably think about 38 years in Sylvan Grove, just a kid from Southwest Kansas coming up, and you know, not long after you retired, they named the football field after you there, Mike Weatherman Field. How special was that, and how special has it been to be a part of the Sylvan community?
Oh, the field thing was huge. I didn't expect that, and I knew something was going on, because they were having the high school, and all of a sudden, I kind of looked around. There was a lot of my ex-players there. So, you know, that was special, having just the kids be there, because we had kids from all sorts of teams and stuff like that showed up at that event. And I have kids around here who live around here now. They moved back. The players are, you know, they're really, really great friends now. And you just champion, you know, their attitude and their friendship, and it's carried on because I play golf with a lot of them, and we do stuff together, and it's just been a good place for us to raise our own kids. And my wife worked at the Bennington State Bank here for years, so we've developed a pretty good life here. We like it.
You got Ben Labertu that is an old football player that took over the football program from you. How much do you like seeing, you know, kind of that thing to stay right here and within your community and your group and see him have success?
Well, that was a great thing to hire with him, because it didn't change very much, because he knew what I did all his time. Mm-hmm. And he has taken over. He's done a good job. He has Eric Nitsch, one of our other players that played at Bethany. Of course, Ben was with JUCO. my son-in-law's one of the assistants. He played at Bethany, Greg Batchman, and and Coach Batchman, Ryan Batchman, he was a coach with me. I probably should have mentioned him a while ago because it was Stan and Ryan and I that did most of the coaching when I was coaching. So Ryan Batchman's with them. So they've got a good coaching staff in this, and there wasn't much, you know, problem with transition into something totally different because Ben does pretty much what we did when we were playing.
Mike Weatherman, longtime head coach of Sylvan Unified, Sylvan Lucas football, girls basketball. Coach, you had a great career, and it's been fun kind of reminiscing, talking about, you know, I wasn't here in the 90s yet. I was still a young pup in high school. So is it fun to kind of go back and talk about some of the things that you've done in your career? We congratulate you on that, and we certainly thank you for taking some time to talk with us here on the Sports Ticket.
Certainly, Dusty, and I thank you for calling, and I enjoyed talking with you.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.